Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and joining me now, as he does every single Tuesday at this time, that would be Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Go listen. Go listen. We talk Tiger football, Tiger basketball, everything Memphis. It releases every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. Christian, how we doing, brother?
I couldn't be any better. If you complain as a football fan this time of year, something's wrong with you. We got college football back a couple weeks ago. We got the NFL back starting on Thursday night. So it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday football. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I have no complaints with the games on. I have complaints about how people are taking in the games and what they have to say afterwards, brother.
Yeah,
that's what's bothering me today. I feel like I'm in an episode of The Twilight Zone. I wake up today. And I participated in the discussion last night after Monday Night Football, but Bears and Vikings, two young quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy on the Vikings side, Caleb Williams, of course, on the Bears side. And I know when you look at Caleb Williams, there's a lot expected of him, a lot on his shoulders. It's an entire city and a franchise that's never had good quarterback play. But you watch that game, Vikings take over late, really good fourth quarter from J.J. McCarthy, but the other three quarters, we can discuss that here in a bit. But they went 27-24. And I wake up today, and J.J. McCarthy is God's gift to quarterbacking, and now it feels like everybody thinks Caleb Williams is beyond repair. What have you made of the discussion around this matchup and these two quarterbacks today? I you know how I feel. I find it insane.
Yeah, I want to start with what you kind of led that discussion off with, which was, you know, being bothered by people's reaction to things that happened over the weekend. And week one's always an overreaction week, right? Because we're so excited, we're so amped up, and it finally happened, and everybody just wants to give their opinion. And over the last fill in the blank, however many years, it's gotten progressively worse because you've gotten to this take era that we're in with the media where everybody's trying to one-up the other person on who can have the craziest, most outlandish take that makes headlines and makes people have discussions on Twitter and on radio shows and podcasts. And so it's cranked up to like a million right now. It just gets worse every single year with the talking heads amongst the media. But with what you said about J.J. McCarthy and Caleb Williams, like it's not only crazy that that's the discussion. Like, if you would have told us that was the discussion before the game, it would have been crazy. But if you told somebody that in the middle of the third quarter, when it was 17-6, J.J. McCarthy looked terrified. He couldn't get in any kind of rhythm. He had made one good throw up to that point, and it was the throw to end the first half that got the Vikings into field goal range, the throw to, I believe it was Jalen Naylor, that got them down there. But other than that, he looked terrible. And then the run game picks up, Jordan Mason gets going, Aaron Jones had a couple of good carries mixed in there as well. And as soon as that happened, it all flipped for him. He started firing on all cylinders, made a great touchdown throw to Justin Jefferson in tight coverage. He kind of just ripped it right down the middle of the field. He had the rushing touchdown at the end of the game on me and you talk about Kevin O'Connell all the time, but my gosh, is he just an incredible,
yes,
incredible play caller.
Christian, can I say, did you see it how I saw it? It was, it was he embodied my take on offensive football. Kiss, keep it simple, stupid. Inside zone, play action, and screen passes. That is all he did to flip the script in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And the zone read to score the rushing touchdown was a great call because they had not done any design
inside zone scheme though. Point. Right. It was just a pull that time instead of a hand.
Right. And nobody on the Bears defense was ready for that. And probably anybody that was watching was shocked by that because it came out of nowhere. He had some motion moving around, gave you some eye candy, and then went to the zone read and nobody was there to touch J.J. McCarthy on the outside. So it was great to watch Kevin O'Connell work. He's so fun to watch him call plays, especially when he gets into a rhythm. But, yeah, the run game flipped it for J.J. McCarthy, and I heard Aaron Jones talking. I can't remember if it was on ESPN or whatever it was on, but he said, you know, they were down 17-6. The offense had been stagnant the entire game. I think it was the drive after the pick six to Nashawn Wright. And he said J.J. McCarthy comes in the huddle and is like, where else would you rather be? No place in the world I'd rather be. he was like, it kind of blew everybody's mind because, like, we're getting stomped right now. We can't do anything offensively. And they kind of fed off of that energy for him. So it's one game. It's not like he played incredibly. He was really good towards the end of the game. But, you know, it wasn't perfect. And we'll see where it goes from here. But it's at least encouraging. I mean, if that game would have kept going how it did, we'd be the talking heads would be talking about how terrible J.J. McCarthy is and how did they let Sam Darnold walk in favor for J.J. McCarthy. But he really shows something at the end of that game. And then on the flip side, when it comes to Caleb Williams, he starts off 10 of 10 for 86 yards. The rushing touchdown, he looked calm, in control, was taking what the defense was giving him, you know, dumping it off to DeAndre Swift, and made a really good throw on the sideline to Roma Dunze to extend the drive. Looked really good to open the game, and then the offense went completely stagnant. And it was Caleb great or perfect by any means? No, he struggled, especially in the second half, really after the first couple of drives of that game. But we talked about the running game with J.J. McCarthy, and for the Bears, it was non-existent. And Ben Johnson, it wasn't for a lack of trying. He was calling running plays, giving DeAndre Swift the ball, but they just couldn't get any momentum going at all with the ground game. And I think that really limited Caleb Williams. It looked like it made him play a little bit tighter. And I don't think he was terrible in this game by any means. I mean, you can cherry pick some of the throws and say this one was bad and he missed.
Absolutely.
It. And the one to DJ Moore is the one to obviously point at. Could have had a touchdown early in that drive, would have scored before the 2-minute warning, basically giving the Bears two timeouts and an attempt to stop the Vikings, and it was a bad miss. But when I look at the game as a whole, he used his legs extremely effectively. I think people really forget how good he is with his legs. I mean, you go back to his first game at Oklahoma and think about the play that he made replacing Spencer Rattler. I think it was like a 75-yard rushing touchdown. It was either his first play or one of his first plays as a college athlete. So he's extremely athletic. He can move around. He can use his legs. It just looks like he needs to settle down sometimes. He gets the happy feet. He starts throwing off base, and his feet aren't set. And I know he has a really strong arm, but those things really prohibit him from being as accurate as he should be. Right. But still, you look at some of the throws he made in the game. I mentioned the throw on the sideline when he was moving to his right to Roma Dunze early in the game was an incredible throw. So there's no doubt that he can make some – elite level throws that only a handful of quarterbacks in the game can make. But he also has to make the layups. He's got to make the easy one. The throw to DJ Moore, if you're going to ascend to a top, 12 plus quarterback, you got to make that throw 99 times out of 100. You can't miss that throw in that moment to at least give your defense a chance to get a stop and potentially get the ball back and tie the game up. So I know people are all over Caleb Williams and talking about how he doesn't have it and he's not going to be a guy in this league and all these things, but I still just see a path to him being an elite quarterback. This was still week one.
Right.
This was the first week that he's played in a real meaningful NFL game with Ben Johnson as his head coach. And I don't know. Maybe I'm hopelessly optimistic, but I think it'll come around. I think – I think there's too many traits there and too much good there to say that he's not going to be a really good NFL quarterback. I still think it's there. I think he just has to clean up on some little things. He has to be able to set his feet more. His clock looked sped up last night, which was a good thing. He took so many sacks last year. That wasn't the case in this game. So even comparing and contrasting from last year, I think there were improvements in this week one game for Caleb Williams.
Yeah, he's just got to be more consistent and predictable, right? Like, that's the thing that you look at. And by predictable, I mean, you talked about the easy throws, the layups. Play on schedule better. Ben Johnson's going to scheme guys open for you. Hit them, right? Like, that's what I talk about with predictability, because on the other side, J.J. McCarthy is nothing if not predictable. As soon as the run game got going, I was on a halftime show last night. Just a quick story. I was on a halftime show with my buddy Braden Fajoco on Twitter Spaces. And he goes, you know, what do the Vikings have to do to get this offense going? J.J. McCarthy looked rough. He looked really bad. Pick six. Didn't look like the guy that they drafted out of Michigan. I said, well, he kind of did, obviously. He kind of did in the sense that the run game wasn't going, so he wasn't going. He's a guy who feeds off of play action and being able to manipulate linebackers and safeties and corners with the run game. And once the run game got going, they had 35 yards on the first half rushing. They had 85 yards in the second half rushing. Once the run game got going, he was able to take advantage. It was literally at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Jordan Mason breaks off an 18-yard rush, which was the longest at that point from scrimmage for the Vikings. Four plays later, here's J.J. McCarthy throwing that touchdown to Justin Jefferson. He is a very predictable quarterback. On the other side, though, Caleb Williams, no. There was a four-play stretch last night that was just it embodies what I mean by this. It was the beginning of the fourth quarter, start of the fourth quarter. First play in this four-play stretch, he throws a sidearm dot with pressure in his face for a first down. Just right on the money, a bunch of velocity, didn't get to set his feet, pressure right in his face. So he does that. They're at first and 10. He steps out of bounds for a loss of four. That's what happened that next play. Then the third play in this four-play stretch, he throws a dime to Roma Dunze. Now, Roma Dunze dropped it, because it was tight coverage, it was tough, but it was a dime. It was right where it needed to be, just had his wide receiver drop it. And then the fourth one, he threw a ball to the left side of the field 6 yards over his receiver's head.
Yeah.
There just has to be some consistency and some predictability within his game before he really takes that next step. But I agree with you. I saw a lot of good last night. Was there a lot of bad as well? Yes, no doubt. But it's hard for me to sit here after everything I've seen from him and completely give up on the notion that he can be a top half quarterback in this league, that he can't be a franchise starting quarterback in this league. I think it is still on the table for him. It's just about what Ben Johnson gets out of him. And I understand this also as well, and you could probably speak to this. We know that, you know, development doesn't always turn out how we want. And when it doesn't turn out how you want very quickly, we don't have four-year projects anymore.
Right.
So if he has more games like this, stacks a half season of performances like this, I wonder what the Bears, Ben Johnson, what they decide to do.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us to remember, because like you said, quarterbacks used to have a lot of time. It didn't used to be you're supposed to be the man in year one. And in a lot of cases, not even year two. It took a couple of years to get there. So I understand that we expect these quarterbacks to be ready to go from day one now. But that's just not always the case. And let's not forget, this is something that has not been talked about at all, and I don't understand why. But this is a second-year quarterback who's in a completely new offense yet again. So last year, Caleb Williams learned an entire offense. And
a bad one, to be clear.
Shane Waldron offense, which we know he is not an effective offensive coordinator, ask Seattle. So he learns that offense. Now this year he goes into a Ben Johnson offense, which – learning an entire offense from scratch over again is never easy, but Ben Johnson is one of the more detail-oriented coaches in the NFL. And what I mean by that is a lot of things have to hit and go right for plays to work. And I feel like there are some offenses that are very simplified. And even if a guy misses a block or a wide receiver misses an assignment or a quarterback misses a read, there's still a positive play to be had. But for Ben Johnson's offense to be at its peak and at its most effective, the blocking has to be perfect. The receivers, whether it's on a pass or run play, have to be perfect. The running back has to handle his assignment. The quarterback has to go through his progression and make the right reads. Like, it is a very difficult offense to execute properly. And so for us to expect it to be perfect in week one and for Caleb Williams to look like Jared Goff looked in the Ben Johnson offense right in week one, it's just a crazy thing to expect. So I think we got to give a little bit more grace. And that's not to say that Caleb Williams is going to be an elite level quarterback. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Who knows how it turns out. But I think to rush to judgment after 1 week in a brand new, very complicated offense is a little absurd. So I think we got to pump the brakes on him. I think we have got to let this play out and see exactly what happens. I think we'll see Luther Burden get more involved throughout the year, which right could potentially help. I mean, it's always tough to tell how a receiver is going to develop, but if he continues to develop, you got to think he's an upgrade over Olamide Zaccheaus. But to me, the biggest thing that's got to make this offense tick is the running game. So we'll see if they get that figured out. They spent a lot of money on this offensive line, bringing in free agents and making trades to make it formidable. And it held up pretty well in pass pro last night. But as far as run blocking went, the lanes just weren't there. So, yeah. I know a lot of people hate on DeAndre Swift. I really don't think it was on him. I just didn't see many openings. I thought the couple times that they did block everything up, he exploited it, but that only happened twice throughout the course of the game. So I think it's just going to take a minute, because that's something else people aren't talking about. This is a completely retooled offensive line.
Right.
I mean, you've got Darnell Wright back and you got Braxton Jones back, but other than that, the interior is completely new. So it's going to take time.
And it's kind of funny, too. Usually, it could be Matt Stafford, who just set the record for opening day starts at 17. You know, it could be a vet. You usually grant grace when a quarterback's going up against Brian Flores, the DC 100%. Of the Vikings. It yeah. feels like Caleb his feet are being held to the fire for that, you know, or they're ignoring that fact to hold his feet to the fire. And that's just it's kind of funny, Christian. You remember me when Caleb Williams came out of USC. I was very much, he's not a generational prospect. You need to calm down and understand that this guy needs to be better on schedule. So all the things I said were correct. And now today, because of the talk and because of what I saw last night, I see other people, like the people that were calling him a generational prospect, flip-flopping. And now I feel like I'm the one protecting Caleb Williams. And that it's weird. It's bizarre. It's a complete 180. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand it at all. All right, now into college football. I want to start with the big game, and then we'll go ahead and get to the upsets that we saw in week two. But the big game was Michigan, number 15, versus Oklahoma, number 18. They win. Oklahoma does at home, 24-13. We learned a lesson for the millionth time, so I don't even know if it's a lesson at this point or just a reality. But don't expect a true freshman quarterback, in this case, Michigan's Bryce Underwood, to go into an SEC environment against a top 25 ranked team and play well. Just don't expect it. He was 9 for 24, 143 yards, didn't throw for a touchdown. It is what it is. I still believe in him. I want to ask you, though, your opinion on the quarterback on the other side, John Mateer. In this game, I think he kind of took the early lead, if you will, in the Heisman race. I think he's third, according to FanDuel, as shortest odds, or second. I think he's tied for second with Carson Beck. We figured that out last night. But in this game, against a sturdy Michigan defense, 21.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.